This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com. You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
Welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. A few years back, amid the corruption and match-fixing scandals revolving around FIFA, the accusations coming out of professional tennis and word of potential match-fixing in the major North American sports and even at the college levels, I got fed up. Now, this is just coming off the doping scandals in cycling and baseball and track and field. So I ask the question, for fans and athletes, coaches and sports administrators, what's worse, doping in sport or fixing games and matches? Well, it was a heated conversation, passion on both sides, as you can imagine. But in the end, and by a very small margin, the majority vote went in the way of match fixing. So I set out to dig a little deeper to find out, one, if it is true. And if so, how much match fixing is going on? Two, if it is true and it is actually happening, how far down does it really go? Or how far up could it reach? Could it be to the top levels of professional sport? And I wanted to know, three, if it is happening, who's masterminding this stuff and how in the world are they pulling it off? So I went to the best source I could think of, a former mafia boss who's masterminded brilliant scams from auto dealerships to union kickbacks and financial services and a multi-billion dollar gasoline tax scheme. He was earning millions in cash every single week, and a big part of his business in his prime were profitable scams in the sports and entertainment industries. He was eventually taken down on racketeering charges. He pled guilty, accepted a 10-year prison sentence, and vowed to do the unthinkable, to walk away from the mob. Michael Franzese, he's the only high-ranking official of a major crime family to ever walk away without protection and survive. He's now dedicated and determined to use the experiences from his past life for the benefit of corporate executives, professional and student athletes, at-risk youth, church audiences, and for anybody seeking inspiration to beat the odds and make positive changes in their lives. I tracked down Michael to ask him how organized crime engaged in illegal sporting scams, and what we got was a whole lot more. Listen to this. We're now joined by Michael Franzese, former mafia boss for New York's violent and feared Colombo crime family. At his peak, he was earning $5 to $8 million per week on illegal and illegal businesses. And in Forbes' list of the 50 most wealthy and powerful mafia bosses, he was 18, just five behind John Gotti. And you've been named one of the biggest money earners in mob history since Al Capone. Michael Franzese, welcome to the show.
How are you, Jeff? Good to be here.
Hey, very, very good. Now, a number of years ago, I met you when I was working with the Toronto Blue Jays, and you were consulting with the FBI and going from team to team, talking to the players about, you know, their situation and the tentacles of the underworld crime getting into the sports world. And I thought that was a very powerful, powerful presentation for all the players. But before we get there, maybe let's talk about your background, because it's absolutely fascinating. You know, you were named one of the biggest money earners in the mob since Al Capone. That's a great accolade if you're looking at it from a perspective. And you're 18th on the list of the 50 most wealthy and powerful mafia bosses. Now, Michael, this is quite the resume and accolade list here. Maybe you could tell us, growing up, how you got into the business and how you were able to earn $5 to $8 million per week. It seems unbelievable to us.
Sure, Jeff. You know, my dad was the underboss of the Colombo family, one of the five New York La Cosa Nostra families back in the 60s. And, you know, he was a very powerful figure in that life. He was always a major target of law enforcement, target of the media. So I grew up, you know, pretty well in that lifestyle, even though my dad didn't want me to be part of that life. He wanted me to go to school and get an education. And I was on that road until he got in some real trouble back in the 60s. He was indicted several times in the state of New York, went to trial a few times and was acquitted each time in the state. But then in 1966, he was indicted in federal court for masterminding a nationwide string of bank robberies. After a lengthy trial, he was convicted and sentenced to 50 years in prison. And in 1970, after he lost all his appeals, he was shipped off to Leavenworth Penitentiary to do his time. Now, I was a pre-med student at Hofstra University when I went in, And it was funny. I was kind of a jock myself. You know, I played two sports, and that's where my head was at the time. But I loved my dad very, very much. He was a great father, and, you know, I almost idolized him as a kid. And when he went away, I was devastated because he was 50 when he went in. And, you know, I figured at 50 on top of that, my dad would never come out of prison alive. So at that time, you know, I was a freshman in college, and Joe Colombo was the boss of my family. He was close to my dad. He kind of took me under his wing. I started to see a lot of my dad's friends, and they would fill my head. You know, Mike, you're going to school. Your father's going to die in prison. If you don't help him out, he's never going to get out of there. And that really influenced me. I went to see Dad in Leavenworth Penitentiary, and I lost interest in school. And I said, Dad, if I don't help you out, you're going to die in here. And I got to make a change in my life. And he was upset, didn't want it for me. But we kind of argued about it in the visiting room. And I was pretty headstrong as a kid. He knew my mind was made up. And he said, son, if you're going to be on the street, then I want you on the street the right way. And in his mind, the right way was for me to become a member of his life. So he told me to go home, that he was going to send word downtown. He was going to propose me into membership for the family. And he did. And, you know, that's how it started for me. I was proposed. The boss at that time, Joe Colombo, he was shot and seriously wounded. A new boss that took over, who's now dead, Tom DiBella. And Tom sat with me and he said, Mike, you know, this is the message I got from your father. He said, you want to become a member of our life? I said, yes. And he said, well, from now on, 24/7. You're on call to serve this family, and if your mother is sick and dying and you're at her deathbed and we call you to service, you leave your mother and you come and serve us. From now on, we're number one in your life before anything and everything. When and if we feel you deserve this privilege, we'll let you know. And I was 22 years old, in kind of like a pledge period for the next year, where I had to do anything and everything I was told to do to prove myself worthy. And, you know, I'll let your imagination go with that one. But all I can tell you is, you know, there's a lot of discipline in that life, a lot of authority, structure. And at times, the life is very violent. And if you're part of that life, you're part of the violence. And, you know, you got to do what you got to do to prove yourself. And after about a year, I was called into a room again. And it was Halloween night, 1975, that myself and five other guys took an oath and became sworn, made members of the Colombo crime family. And that's how it started for me.
Wow, we're talking with Michael Franzese, one of the top and most powerful mafia bosses. And on the list of the 18 or the 50 most wealthy and powerful, you're just five behind John Gotti himself as a member of the Colombo crime family. Well, let's talk about this. As a pre-med student, this is just a major shift. I can't imagine how this would happen as a pre-med student and hitting the street. You know, the imagination does run wild here, Michael. You know, the closest we're ever going to get to it in our lives is watching the movies on TV, you know, and you've been depicted in a couple of those movies. How accurate is that in terms of, you know, letting our imagination understand what you're talking about here?
Well, you know, in terms of the most accurate movies that are out there, I mean, The Godfather, Jeff, I mean, I love that movie. It was probably the greatest, you know, movie that was done in that genre, but it was fictional. And they were fictional characters. But you take a movie like Goodfella, where they did mention my name,
yes,
or Donnie Brasco. I knew both of those crews really well. And that's a pretty accurate portrayal of the life. They got it fairly right in both of those films. And they were based upon true stories, and they were pretty close to reality. So in watching those films, you get a pretty good sense of what the life was all about.
Well, Michael, when you're inside of the family now, I'm just very interested about this. You know, you've been accepted into the family. You're on call 24/7. Did you have freedom to reign, or were you following rules? How did you get to the point where you were leading and then, you know, setting up the systems to earn $5 to $8 million per week?
Well, you know, when you come into the life, I mean, obviously, you know, you got to answer to your boss. So you come in as a soldier and you're appointed, you know, under a cop regime or captain. And you always have to, you know, report to that person and ultimately to the boss. But you're given free rein in the fact that if you're an earner, they want you to go out and earn money. I mean, that's what it's all about. And you bring money for yourself and for the family. Now, you know, the fallacy is that you come into that life and everybody becomes wealthy. Well, that's not the case. You know, the life is really separated. There's no middle class. You either are an earner or you're just a guy that, you know, is part of the life and becomes useful and does the work, so to speak. And in our family, the Colombo family, we had maybe 115 made guys at that time. It was really about 20 of us that were earning good money. The rest, you know, we kind of supported, and they got union jobs, and they just were loyal guys that hung around. So I was encouraged to go out and do what I could. And I had kind of a head for business. And, you know, I was fortunate, Jeff, in that I knew how to use that life to benefit me in business. And I was very aggressive. I worked 18 hours a day. I got into a lot of different things. I mean, I had two automobile dealerships that I owned. I was had interest in a couple of restaurants. I had a leasing company. And, you know, on the illegal side, I had a major bookmaking operation. I had 12 or 13 bookmakers working for me. I was very heavy into, union and labor racketeering. I had a construction company that I used the unions to benefit me from. And my biggest, earning that I ever made was through the gasoline business. And I fell upon something there with somebody, and, the amount of money I was making out of that operation, and basically we were just defrauding the government out of the tax on every gallon of gasoline. And it turned out to be an operation where I was grossing, $60 to $70 million a month.
$60 to $70 million a month. We're talking to former mafia boss Michael Franzese. Michael, that is an incredible story. Now, the tables turn. Getting out must have been an absolute scary episode in your life. I mean, it seems to me, just knowing, the rumors and hearing you talk before, that's not just something you walk away from, simply shaking the dirt off your hands and riding off into the sunset.
No, the story. I'm sure most people know that when you leave that life, they say you either leave in a coffin or you join the government and enter a witness protection program. And once you're in for life. What you know about the life, you can't erase. It's in your mind, your heart, and there's no way to just say, hey, I'm done. And, it's hard to really summarize what happened, but I'll do my best. Mm-hmm. I've been in the life a number of years. They didn't make me a captain. I was a cop of the regime. I was appointed that in 1980 by my boss. And quite honestly, they were grooming me to possibly take over the family. The boss had a son. He and I were very close. We came in at the same time, the same age, and our dads were grooming us to take over the family. But I knew what the life was all about at that point, and I saw some things that were, really kind of, I don't want to use the word scary, but kind of disappointing, because, the life is supposed to be built on respect and to a degree it is, but then to a large degree, there's a lot of politics and things go down that you would hope wouldn't go down in a life of allegedly of honor. So, but I would have never left. I mean, I was at the top of my game. I became a major target of law enforcement. I beat five cases. I beat Giuliani in a big racketeering case. I had my own helicopter. I had a jet plane. I had houses in three, major states in the country. I'm bringing $8 to $9 million a week, my end, into the operation. So I had it going on. I mean, I was at the top of my game. And, I had an interest in a production company. I was making movies out in L.A. A guy had got me involved, and I invested some money. And we were making movies for a couple of years. And I produced a movie, which was a breakdance movie, a lot of music and dance back in 1985. And on the set of that movie, I met a young woman. She was a dancer in the film, who I fell very much in love with, and is now my wife of 26 years. And she was actually my motivation for walking away from the life. And how I did it, Jeff, I got to tell you, there's no blueprint for walking away from that life. But, I'm a guy that took certain risks in my life. I thought I knew the life well enough to where I could make a break, move out to California. I wasn't going to let anybody walk me into a room, in one night, because the unfortunate part of that life, your best friend can walk in a room when you're in trouble. You don't walk out again. And I said, well, that's not going to happen to me. And I did what I could to try to protect myself. But when it became public that I was walking away, all hell broke loose for me. And boss puts a contract. My dad disowns me. The feds are all over me to become a witness, because they said, you're a dead man anyway. Word's all over the street. And I had 7, 8, 9 years of a real struggle. I took a plea on a major case to kind of make the break. I got a 10-year sentence. I did 8 on the 10. They locked me down for so much of the time because my life was in danger. And I just went through a lot of struggles to get out. But, I changed my lifestyle. I used whatever knowledge and experience I had. And I can tell you at this point, I just about outlasted everybody. Everybody I knew in that life is either dead or in prison forever. You know, you mentioned that Fortune magazine article.
Yeah.
It was written in 87. It was 50 of us on there. 50 biggest and most powerful mob bosses in the country was the title. And they had a chart with the 50 of us on there. I was number 18 on the list in rank. I was five behind Gotti. They ranked me. And I was the youngest guy on the list. Well, the interesting thing is that today, 23 years later, out of that list of 50, 43 of them are dead. Three of them that I know of are doing life in prison, and by some, you know, fortunate reason, I'm here to talk to you here today and do what I do now. So, and also the five guys that the night I got made, there were six of us, all five of them are dead, and not one of them died of natural causes. So to say that I've been fortunate and blessed and just happy to be where I'm being would be an understatement.
Wow. Michael Franzese, former member of New York's feared Colombo crime family, joins us. Well, you've taken a turn, 23 years, and wouldn't you know it, it took a lady to get it done. I mean, how many times have we heard this story? It happens in your world just like it happens in our world, it seems. But we're glad it happened, because meeting you with the Blue Jays and the presentation you gave to the players there really painted a different picture in terms of sports and how the criminal underworld has stretched its tentacles into the world of professional sports. Because let's face it, that's a big money racket as well. Michael, maybe you could share with us what you share with so many athletes out there in terms of being aware of what's going on around them.
Yeah, you know, my basic message, and I got to tell you, you know, I owe a lot to Major League Baseball and all the pro leagues, because they actually solicited me in prison to participate in a video that all the players saw at that time. And it was an anti-gambling video. They did a great job on it, in my opinion. They spent about $250,000 and talked about, you know, Pete Rose and Sleaster and all those guys. And I did my part when I agreed to do it. And they featured me kind of prominently. When I got out of jail, they asked me to take the message directly to the players. And that's how I got to meet you and do what I do now. And basically, I let them know, you know, players are targeted. Gambling is a major, major business for organized crime. And during my time, when I had these bookmakers working for me, I wasn't a bookmaker myself, but every bookmaker on the street that can, you know, cover a decent bet is somehow associated with organized crime, especially in New York. I mean, you can't operate without being associated with one of us. We just wouldn't let you. And, you know, we had a lot of players gambling with our bookmakers. And we'd get them in trouble. You know, they'd get into debt for $20,000, $30,000. I remember so often, Jeff, I'd get a call from the bookmaker. You know, so-and-so is gambling with us. Mikey's in debt for $20,000, $25,000. Should I cut him off? And I would say, why cut him off? You're writing down an entry on a piece of paper. Let him get in debt with you for $100,000, $150,000, $200,000. And then bring them to me, and then I'll show you how we'll make some real money. And, you know, we targeted a lot of these guys because, as you know, gambling is prevalent in the leagues. And especially what I'm seeing more today than ever is on the college level. So many of these student athletes, because there's so much access to gambling today, are getting themselves in trouble. We just had another, you know, article in the paper today about a student athlete from Auburn. You know, who's involved in a punch shaving deal, at least the allegations of that. Not too long ago, a few months ago, University of San Diego. It happens all the time, and that's why I try to get myself out there and try to educate the players, because they don't realize that there's such big money in gambling on sports, both on the street and legitimately, and that gamblers will take advantage of that. And these guys don't realize that they're targets, and they got to be careful who they get involved with. And their gambling habits themselves, because not only can they get in trouble that way, but Jeff, I'll be honest with you, I've been around everything in my life. You spend 20 years on the street and you see drugs, you see alcohol, you see all of this kind of stuff that just destroys people's lives. But I will tell you, I've seen more lives destroyed over gambling than I have either drugs or alcohol. And it could be a very, very addictive vice, and people really got to be careful, and especially our athletes. They got to watch, because they're targets.
There are no question. We're talking with Michael Franzese, former a mafia boss with the Colombo crime family of New York. Michael, you said something very interesting. I just want to, for our listeners' sake, maybe paint the picture, the dirty picture side here. When those guys actually were brought to you, what was your approach then? I mean, this is where things probably got really ugly.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's basically the pitch. And, you know, these were players that were known, you know, known and unknown. And, you know, they'd bring them to me and I'd say, hey, so-and-so, you know, you owe me a couple of bucks here. I didn't know if you knew, but the guy you've been gambling with has a partner and I'm him. And how are you going to pay me? And, you know, back then, as you know, guys weren't making, back in the 80s, they weren't making the kind of money they were making now. If they were in debt for 100, 150, that was a lot of money. And they tell me, well, you know, Mike, I don't really have it, and so on and so forth. And I say, well, you know what? You're a good guy. I like the way you play. I tell you what I'm going to do. You don't have to pay me all at once, but I'm going to charge you 5% a week on 100. So you give me $5,000 a week in cash until you can get that 100,000. So I'm going to give you a break. And he would go away, and, you know, he's saying to himself, he don't want to say it to me because he wants to get out of the room. $5,000 a week. Oh, my gosh, how am I going to do that? And he'll pay 2, 3, 4 weeks, and then he can't do it anymore, and we'll bring him back. And I'll tell him, listen, you know, you got to pay. You don't walk away from this debt. And if you don't want to pay me, you know, don't worry about it. You could leave here today, and you don't have to come back. I'll find you when I'm ready, and I'll take care of it my way. Or I'll give you another option. Here's the deal. You know, you're a football player, you're a basketball player. If he's a basketball player, we'll go easy because it's an easy sport. You know, any basketball player on the court has tremendous impact on a game. One player.
Right.
And I tell him, listen, guys, you know, you don't have to win or lose. It's not about that. It's all about the spread. So if you're favored to win tomorrow night by 10 points, you make sure you don't cover. Win by 7, win by 6, win by 8, I don't care. You did that for me 3 or 4 times, we'll be even. I'll handle my end, you just do your end, and then you don't have to worry about nothing. We shake hands and we're friends. And if you don't want to do that, leave here today, and like I said, I'll deal with it in another way, but, you know, don't count on too much longevity in your sport. And that's it. You don't have to say too much more, Jeff.
You're right, and I get the message loud and clear. Trust me, I'm sitting here, and I get it. Hey, you literally owned these guys. They had no choice. You were in total control. And, Michael, I got to ask you right now before we let you go, hey, this is still happening today.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Jeff, I got to tell you, too, you know, some of the pro players that I talk with, they're not going to throw. I don't see them throwing a game. They make enough money, but the money, the losses that some of these guys have talked to me about and some of the things that they've done as a result of these losses, it's a shame. And I tell them, you know, you guys better have good, you know, a good retirement plan. You better make your money and sock some of it away, because if you continue these habits when you're out of the sport, you're going to have some problems. And on a college level, these young people, you know, I make the same offer every time, Jeff. When I leave a school, I tell them, listen, you got an issue with gambling or anything else, I'm your friend. I don't have to know your name. I don't work for the NCAA. I'm not part of enforcement. I don't have to report to anybody. I'm here to help. If you have an issue, email me. Email me from a bogus email address. I don't care. I just want to help. I got to tell you this, Jeff. I've done over 400 universities, mostly Division I, some Division II mixed in there. It has never failed me yet. By the time I get back to my hotel room, I have emails from students that I spoke to that in that session that have gambling issues.
Wow, Michael. An incredible story from a pre-med student to one of the most renowned mafia personalities. Now you're a man on a mission, talking to corporate executives, professional and student athletes. You go and work with at-risk youth and church audiences and basically speaking to anybody to share your knowledge with them to help keep them out of trouble and put them on the path. An incredible story.
Jeff, thank you. And you know, just for your audience to know, you know, it's, I tell our young people, it's very possible to start out one way in life and end up 180 degrees to the other side. And that could be good or bad based upon the choices that you make in life. And I try to be an encouragement to let people know, you know, I came to where I am now fighting and screaming. I wasn't looking to be a good guy in many ways. I just wanted to escape a life and have some peace. And I got led to where I am now, and it's been extremely rewarding to be able to be out there and encourage people and hopefully give them some advice and based upon my experience as to how they can stay out of trouble, not get into trouble, turn their lives around, because it really can happen in this life. And we just got to surround ourselves with good people and try to do the best we possibly can, and we have a good shot of making things work out.
Michael, hey, appreciate your time today. Listen, what great conversation. We'll definitely have to hook up again here in the near future, and if people want more information, it's michaelfranzese.com.
Thank you, Jeff, and anytime, I'm available to you, buddy. Thank you.
There you go, our conversation with Michael Franzese, former mafia boss, now crusader for all things good and fair, as he uses his past experiences to shed some light on what's really going on behind the scenes and how organized crime may be influencing the world around us. I want to thank Michael for coming on the show. I want to thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time on Crush Performance.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.